Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is not Mark, but he's got no voice today, so I'm introducing the episode. Hey, everyone, it's Amanda. We've got two guests sitting on our couch today. Joyce, who is a repeat guest. Some of you may remember her. She came in and talked to us about her breast cancer diagnosis a little while back. And today she's brought in a friend with her, Sarah. And I said, Joyce, what are we talking to your friend Sarah about? And she said, anything and everything. So it's all going to be a big surprise today. But Sarah is a neuroscientist. Is that? Yeah. And she teaches neuroscience.
Like Big Bang Theory neuroscientist?
Well, I went to school for it. Yeah. I have a master's in research in neuroscience.
That sounds fun. You don't sound thrilled with this.
I'm much more practical than like put my goggles and go fight over who's going to fund my research type of deal.
Gotcha.
I try to take philosophical and kind of trippy information that is the realm of neuroscience and make it digestible. So
cool.
Yeah. That's what I do for a living. I teach that as a course. I teach it on day retreats, which that's where Joyce and I work together. She's the massage therapist that people book while they're coming to learn about how their nervous system can feel relaxed and all the different modalities of movement, breathing, you know, the art of touch and the healing effects of it.
Cool.
Well, this is how we're going to start today. I'm going to get both of you on the couch to introduce yourselves. Yes, I know Joyce said, I'm not really here to talk, but you are here and you were the one that made the connection. So a little background, sort of what, how you got into the field you're in, what drove you to do this, and what type of work you do today. So we'll start with Sarah, and then Joyce, you have to reintroduce yourself. I'm not really giving you a choice in that.
Okay, so I would say this little lassie's journey started. I came to Canada from Iran. I feel like anything in the Middle East with women, it's a little fucked up because, you know, there's a lot of trauma around being a woman in the Middle East and a lot of like lack of strength. And so when I came to Canada, I was like, I'm going to join every sports team that I can possibly be in. I'm going to be in the drama team, this and that. And then it came time to like, you know, getting a job. I was like 16 and I just didn't want to work at Tim Hortons. So when the Army came recruiting, I was like, all right, maybe I'll just do some Army stuff.
Why didn't you want to work at Tim Hortons?
Honestly, I felt like customer service wasn't my strongest suit. I was an angry child and I needed like some mode of relief for that. And I really liked, you know, do you remember back in high school we used to do like camping, we'd go and make fire and stuff? Did you guys ever experience that?
My high school years were way different than you guys. I don't know, I'm like decades older than
you didn't do any overnight retreats or anything at high school?
Where... elementary school, that's what I mean. I was so fucking old. We did that when I was in
No, actually you're right, I did that in like grade 7 grade 8. What am I saying? It wasn't even high school. But anyway, yes, so you went camping.
I didn't know they do that in elementary school. See, I'm learning new things. But in high school, I really like that aspect of being outdoors and making fire. And I think like those primitive things at the time, I was like, man, this is fucking cool. And so I just told my mom, like, Mom, the Army is like outdoor camping and they pay you. And she was like, okay, we go, we do this. And, you know, she like came and signed up with me and bam, boom, like the summer of turning 17, like I went away, I did Army training. Like the first night I was like, what the fuck have I done? But it was really character building.
I need to hear a little bit about Army training, and I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. One, whenever I meet someone who is in the Army for an extended period of time, and I've got really close friends who have been in the Army, and I don't know that I've ever had these discussions with them, but I always wonder like the motivation. So you said a little bit, you said it was like camping. I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe joining the Army as camping, but was that your only motivation, or what did you think you were getting into? And then what did you actually get into? What was Army training like?
Okay, so I'm going to tap into 16-year-old Sarah's brain here, but I've thought about this a lot, like processed it over the years of like what could have motivated me, you know? So I would say that there was this aspect of being able to be away from my family. So like experience life as a young adult, separate from all the constraints of everything. Second, it was healing to be out in nature, which I then, like, you know, discovered years later that that potentially was why, you know, I felt really comfortable being outdoors and doing outdoorsy things. Mm-hmm. Then I would say that, like, you know, my mom was an immigrant, like, she worked all the time. She was a single mom. Like, no one was going to teach me to drive. And I joined Armored Corps. So I learned how to drive on a wheeled tank.
Wow.
That's pretty fucking cool for, like, a 16-year-old girl from Tehran, you know?
See, we were very different 16-year-old girls by the sounds of it. I was the princess that wanted to be inside with cable and electricity, and outdoorsy stuff was cool for like a weekend. Mm-hmm. But I'm such a city person.
It's weird to me because I don't know anything about anything. So a lot of things are weird to me. It's weird to me that you want to feel independent and leave your family, and you'd want to walk away from the rules of your family. But then you walk into the fucking army where it's nothing but fucking rules.
Yeah, so regimented.
That's weird to me.
Yeah, I would say it's like the oldest corporation out there, right? The yeah. The rules are like thousands of years old. And it was very kind of like... needed to be I needed to be regimented at the time, I think, to just like process what was going on, like have a little bit of control. And the army was like the dad I wanted to have, you know. Mm. All of the figures around and like all of the things you're talking about, discipline and order and you know, her rush to relax and all of these different things that we were kind of brainwashed to believe were very soothing to my distressed nervous system, I would say, at the time.
You look like you just are an individual just based on your appearance. You're like, I'm going to be me and I'm going to do what I want to do and dress how I want to dress and say what I want to say in the fucking moments. How do you deal with the place that says, you got to wear this, no alterations. You got to have your hair like this, no alterations. Any piece of individuality, at least that's the way I view the army. I don't know anything about the fucking army. That's the way I view it. Gets stripped away. How does that work for you? Because you seem like someone that loves that part of, like, I want to express.
Believe it or not, even in uniform, I had my individuality. I would say that maybe to you, for you, that is a very like big thing in your reality. But again, like, I grew up somewhere where I had to wear a hijab, and like, I don't want to wear a hijab, so like, that didn't seem like that big of a deal to me, the whole uniformity of it. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was like about dress and deportment. Like, how could you look as good as you can even mm-hmm. though everyone's wearing the same thing, right? Like,
it's
how,
like a challenge.
Yeah. And you know what? The thing was, like, I love a good challenge. I topped all of my courses. I was a top candidate on a very badass course called Soldier Qualifications, where you learned like how to dig trenches, how to do like offensive and like pretty cool shit for like a 17, 18 year old girl to learn. Like, and the thing was that for some reason, maybe Mark, like, you can understand, other humans seemed really illiterate with the radio. Like, the army radio is this like really complex piece of machinery for no reason anyway. And so like radio, and the tech behind it was really difficult for people to comprehend. But I just like follow instructions while I like learning things. So I did really well in that. So I just like would rise really high. Like, carrying the radio and being on the radio got you privileges like Pringles and Coke in the field, which is like wow. Really like, you know, high commodities when you're starved of more morals.
And like I said, I know other people who have been in the army, and it's always been a question for me, like, because again, I'm only comparing to my own experience. There was never a part of me that was like, I want to go to this ultra regimented type of place where I feel like I'd be separated from my family, like all the things you're saying you wanted about it, the mm-hmm. independence, the discipline, is every reason that I was like, yeah, that's not for me. I think I'm way too much of a princess for that.
And you know what? My name means princess.
Wow.
Okay. And now I am this soft and cuddly, like, I very much tap into my princessy existence, but I didn't really discover that side of myself until I much later, like being stripped of warmth and food and my family's love and a bed and a shower. And then when you come back home, you're like, fuck, I've been taking all this shit for granted. And so, you know, like that just seems like a really great place to find presence.
Well, we sort of sidetracked because I had to know about the army. But you were telling us how you got into neuroscience and where you are today.
So the military paid for my schooling. It seemed like a win-win situation. I chose the most expensive program that I could do that I got into, which was specialist neuroscience at U of T. And I did co-op. I worked for the military during like the DRDC, the research development part of it. I did a lot of like collaborative work in my master's. One of the people that sat on the panel was from the military. So it helped in shaping my career, I would say. And like, I wanted to study recovery from brain injury because a lot of my colleagues that went overseas suffered from, you know, really terrible concussions and during the Afghan war. And so like, my research actually was related to seeing what's happening in the real world. So I kind of danced back and forth between academia and the military until I stumbled into the world of yoga.
Pause right there. We're going to come back to the world of yoga. I want to bring Joyce in here right now. Oh, she just hangs her head down like, no, don't talk to me. I want you to reintroduce yourself, Joyce. Who are you? Why are you here? Because I want you guys to sort of together tell me how you met and how Sarah ended up on my couch talking about the military and neuroscience and yoga. Three things I never thought I'd say in the same sentence.
So I'm Joyce, and I've been a massage therapist for since 09. I'm not going to calculate right now. So the last time I was here, I was talking about my cancer treatments and stuff. And why I brought Sarah here is because I think she's an amazing person and she's so interesting. Like the path that she has gone through is just so crazy. And where she has landed right now, like, it's amazing. And I thought Amanda and Mark will think that they won't stop talking. That's pretty much what I think is going to happen.
So how did, okay, you talked about, Sarah kind of brought it up, that you guys met at these retreats.
Yeah, tell me how you met.
So once I started working as a massage therapist, I worked at a yoga studio, and that's where I met Sarah. And it's not that I go into yoga to do yoga, but it's just hanging out at the front desk and just, she's just, I don't know, she's out there. She's really loud and she's like, you wouldn't think she's a yoga teacher.
That's true. Yoga teachers all have the calm yoga voice. And Sarah warned us before we started recording that she's incredibly loud and talks with her hands and she might make some kind of crazy sound during the... Can you just do it? Not exactly what you'd expect of a yoga teacher.
Right. And then so when you go into class with her, sometimes she does that, but sometimes she sings and it's just like it's... All her students that's been in her class will always try to look for when she's teaching. That's how she is.
Okay. So Sarah's like, I'm getting all choked up. Okay, so tell us then, Sarah, how you get into the world of yoga.
Wait, did you feel as smitten as she did with you?
Have you met Joyce? First of all,
yes.
She's so standoffish. How could you not love her?
And she's like, please don't talk to me, actually. But she always feeds you.
That's not true. Kenny always feeds you. That's her better half. Like,
okay. That's true. He does the cooking, right?
It's true. But she is fiercely loyal and one of those people that you want, you know, like a wartime friend. Like, you know, there's peacetime friends and wartime friends, and peacetime friends you definitely don't want around when you're moving by yourself. Right? They're like the useless colleague in the corner. But wartime friends are like people that, you know, can like, you don't see them for a long time, and then after a while you sit together and it's as if nothing's happened and you can just like dive deep with them, you know. So mm-hmm. Joyce is like one of those rare humans. Joyce was with me when I was pregnant with my first baby, My water broke at the studio, like everybody was around. And shortly after I had my firstborn Stuart, Joyce, who was giving birth a few months later, basically got all of the baby stuff. I was like, please take it. I don't want to look at it again.
Oh, so you guys have known each other a long time then? Because you don't have babies anymore.
No. This is like in the previous decades. Like we met over. Yeah.
So her son is 9 months older than mine.
Okay. Yeah.
And yeah, they're so like besties.
They are. Yeah, they grew up together. Yeah, like, how could they not be? So yeah. We're very involved with each other. Like when I run my day retreats, Joyce obviously is there to spread love in the realm of an RMT, like, you know, on hand. And Kenny, her husband, is our chef Kenny. Like he prepares all our meals. He like feeds all our people, educates us ignorant humans about exotic fruits and different delicious things that he cooks. So like we're very involved with each other.
So how did you get into the world of yoga from 16-year-old rebel to military girl to...
What did your family think of the whole military thing?
I think they still like don't really understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's not for them to really pass judgment or anything. I've always been really strong in my will and stubborn to boot. So, you know, it was just something like, I would say, so I went back to Iran after having been in the military, and the men in my family were like looking at me like I was like this revered figure, you know, because I think like there's this misapprehension that like women are a specific way and they like need creature comforts. And maybe that's true, but that we are also fierce creatures and badass goddess warriors. And like I fully tapped into that element of mine. And so.
Or are they scared because you went to the army?
Well, that too, you know, I can kill a man with my hands. So that's.
Stay on Sarah's good side.
But we use these hands to heal now. So.
Yes. She's a yogi now.
But then you met your better half in the army too.
So I can say now with a romantic mind, you know, now that I've softened in my princess years, that maybe that was the whole reason. Like I was in the military. I met this gorgeous man and fell in love. And, you know, now he's the father of my children and my life partner. And we also work together in, creating and, you know, spreading healing. And, maybe that was the whole purpose of it.
So for you, is there no act of randomness? Everything falls in line for purpose?
I don't know if that's how I would say, like, there's an external thing like that. I don't know if that's what you mean, but rather when I'm making sense, like maybe throughout your lifetime, like you alluded that you have been here for a while. You know, there's times where you reflect back on the things that you've done and like make sense of things, you know, like so that your next expanded version of you in this container can kind of comprehend and put all of those things synergistically together to make sense of what's happening now, right? I'm sure you're not doing what you're doing randomly. I mean, maybe you are, but it's kind of falling as part of like supporting your entire massage therapy practice and your teachings, and everything's reinforcing each other, right? So I'm just making sense of things, like that's what I like to do. So it made sense for me to be in the military, to meet a man who also has, like, you know, we talk a lot. I haven't been in the army for years, but the decade that I spent in the army equipped me with specific tools that still help me run, you know, retreats, events, hosting overseas retreats, right? Mm-hmm. So, and my husband, he's literally my partner. Like he's my backbone. He does everything, and that was his like from military skills. Like he learned to just be jack of all trades. He can just like fix things from like a broken toilet to like a computer, and we're very quick to think on our feet, which is really necessary. Like when you're hosting a group of people in Costa Rica, where there's like, you know, the jungle and all its unknowns, it's really necessary to like have those skills to like think on your feet and be able to problem solve. So
you guys have a good partnership. That's good. I said that to Mark the other day. It's mean not when it came to working. When we were in the middle of moving, we were like putting something together or taking something. It was like furniture. I can't remember if we were taking something apart or putting something together. And this is one area where, like, I don't know, it's a mental block for me. I can look at, I'm somehow good at puzzles, but then I look at like pieces of furniture and I'm like, I don't even know what's up, what's down, what's like, I just look at it and I'm like, fuck. And I just looked at him putting this thing together with like such ease. It was like he'd done this 17 million times, and maybe he has. And I was like, did I ever tell you how glad I am that you're here? Like, I, this would just be a pile of wood if you weren't here, because I wouldn't know what the hell to do with it. Yeah. Oh, it's true. It would maintain a pile of wood. So now I want to know.
Yoga.
I want to know.
Sorry, how'd you get into yoga? That's okay.
Okay. So I would say that like anything where your identity is stripped and your independence is taken away, you can only be in that state of fight flight for a short period of time. And I would say that I was burnt out, and I was like in the middle of my 20s, very young, but I was a, you know, lieutenant in the military, and I was in charge of a lot of people, and I in charge of like building field hospitals, and that took a toll on my system. It was like being on for too long. Mm-hmm. And the building where was the recruiting center on Yonge Street is like across the street from where our old studio was, where Joyce and I met. And so I just like one day fumbled my way into the yoga studio. And you know, when you like, I don't know if you feel this way about your massage therapy career, but you know, when you just like do a specific movement and you're like, this feels so good, like this feels right.
See, I know that in terms of yoga. Yeah. Actually, I started doing yoga in my early 20s, and the first time I went to a yoga class, I remember actually feeling completely out of my element, like didn't know what was going on. And then I stopped for a short period of time. Like, I was like, oh, this isn't for me. Like, I'm not interested. This isn't fun. And then one of my good friends convinced me to come to a different studio with her. And she was really, really loving the classes she was doing. She loved this instructor. We actually had this instructor on our podcast. Her and I found each other again because she's RMT. And so I went with my friend to this class, and it was like, for the first time, just the way the instructor was like taking us through everything and the way she would explain things and her correction, I was like, for the first time ever, I'm like, oh, this is what this is supposed to feel like. Oh, this is what it feels like when I properly use my hips this way. Oh, like, it was like everything just clicked, and I'm like, I understand my body right now. Whereas like the last time I went to yoga, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Like, I see these people doing these poses with like such ease, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
That's exactly what, thank you. That was literally my experience also. Like, I can kindred spirit in that way.
Do you guys know anyone that's into yoga that didn't have something going on before? You're talking about slow medicine, right?
Yeah.
She was a disaster before. She probably wouldn't term it that way, but I'll just say it like that to wrap it up. She was a little bit of a disaster before she found yoga. Dory was a little bit of a disaster, alcoholic, before she found yoga. You burnt out from military, and then you find yoga. Is there a common theme with you? I don't know anything about yoga either, just in case you can't tell. Is there a common theme with people that are attracted to yoga, and they got some shit going on?
Yeah.
Does yoga attract that?
I don't know.
Humans. Suffering.
It's true. Humans.
Humans.
Do you know a human that isn't a little bit of a disaster? Well, I don't know many, if any.
Those two people that we mentioned, they were on the extremes of the human experience, right? Being an alcoholic is an extreme of the human experience, possibly. I'm just curious, because I'm not attracted to yoga. I don't feel like I'm on the extremes of disaster. Disaster is the wrong word, but you guys are picking up what I'm saying. Does yoga attract that?
I don't know if it attracts that. Sarah can weigh in here. I think
it's more yoga people.
I think it's more like when you, if you decide to, as she said, she just kind of stumbled in there one day, like, oh, it's across the street, let me go check it out.
What about yoga is grounding for someone that feels like they're spiraled?
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, tell me, because I want to know.
There is a few different elements of the practice.
Okay.
So yoga, it gets termed as a physical practice, but it's actually, that's one of the eight pillars that we're mm-hmm. coming into study. And the term means to yoke yourself together. So to put yourself together. So the people that you're talking about, I don't know this Dory person. Mm-hmm. I do know the slow medicine person. Mm-hmm. These people were spread, had lost parts of themselves, like most of us, right? So I think that the practice offers a platform where you can observe your mind without judging yourself, and in a physical way, so through the soma, through the body, dispel any kind of like stuck energy, or, you know, we know that the body keeps the score. So it's a means of releasing that energy that needs to be released, whether it was because emotions weren't expressed, needs weren't being met, love wasn't readily available,
right.
You know? So I think that it's a safe platform
for that. So it creates a really safe environment to foster that internal healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so.
Cool. Okay. Because to me, yoga was, I don't know anything about yoga. It's just exercise to me, right?
Yeah. So,
and that's like, the thing is the first time I went, as I said, I had that experience where to me, it was just like, I wasn't getting any of that. I was getting an exercise class that I wasn't enjoying. So after a few weeks of doing it, I'm like, this isn't for me. And I stopped. And it wasn't until I had Megan from Slow Medicine as a yoga instructor. And this was probably 16 years ago. And I went into one of her classes and then I was hooked. And then I couldn't stop going.
Yeah. And so in some similar situation to that, I was like looking outside of myself for answers. You know, I think what was happening was I had come to the end of my journey with the military, like whatever our exchange was, it was kind of like rendered done on my end. And like the identity crisis of like having built a career out of the military and like all of the things that come with the ego side of that, like it was obviously a part of me was like dying. And then in the military there's this hierarchical respect, like because you've been able to accomplish X, Y, and Z through the courses that you've done, you demand respect. And so in the real world it doesn't work that way. So right. I think like understanding and shifting from that world into the real world was like very tumultuous for a 20-something-year-old Sarah. And I remember being hired by a company out of Calgary, actually, to work with civilians in the battle space. So I was a civilian liaison that was training the troops that were going overseas to the Afghan war. And outside of Calgary, they'd built like a mock village, so to speak. And so the soldiers would come and go through their like tasks and things like that. And you know, I was working in that group and some of the young boys like weren't listening to what I was saying. And like, I just did what I would do in the military, which was like raise my voice. And everybody was like, why are you fucking raising your voice? Like, no one's gonna fucking listen to you. Like, it doesn't matter to us that you were some kind of a big deal. And I was like, right. I don't have skills. Oh, shit, you know? So in the yoga room, what the words that resonated with me is this idea that, like, we're always looking outside of ourselves for approval or, you know, like, external locus of control. And in yoga, it's all about internal wisdom. So you listen to your you introspect your sensations and your thoughts and all that stuff, and then that's when the wisdom comes up for you. And whether that's just like some clarity or your next career choice or to be kinder to yourself, whatever that is for you. And the teacher said, like, everything you need is already within you. And so that to me, it seems like simple words, but it was like the light at the end of the tunnel that I needed to like kind of make the decision that I wanted to make. So I had $8,000 left from my master's scholarships. And that year, the teacher training for Moksha at the time, Modo now, was in Brazil, like on an island off the coast of Bahia, Brazil. And it just happened to cost that much. So I like exchanged that $8,000 for a month long experience on this remote island where we did yoga twice a day. And it was like really profound and life changing.
When you went there with your last $8,000, did you have an intent? Meaning, like, did you think, I'm going to go do this teacher training and then come back here and devote my life to yoga? Or was it like, this is a really cool experience, let's see what happens?
Yeah, so I just finished my master's at U of T. I worked at the Toronto Rehabilitation Institute, you know, TRI. Mm-hmm. And I was like coming back to enroll in my PhD, basically. Like, that was the plan, was just to like continue on and, you know, get an academia role afterwards, like get budgets for research, just follow the career path. Mm-hmm. And then when I was overseas, I had like this profound awakening when I came back into my body and realized like how dissociated I had been, having been in the military and like, you know, just all of the things. And when I came into myself and like listened deeply, I realized that like I don't care about any of that fucking shit. So it was time to do. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no idea. I didn't go to teacher training.
What does a profound awakening look like for you?
There was a lot of vomiting. A lot of shitting, physical cleanse. There was a lot of swimming in the ocean, lots of tears, lots of physical movement, sitting in a sauna that was dug out of like, you know, their earth there that they had built, like as a village, they had built the sauna together, and a pregnant woman chanting while another man played the didgeridoo in this like 40 plus, I don't know, 50 plus centigrade.
Is there like ayahuasca involved?
No, nothing. Nothing of that sort. I know that that's the thing, but yeah. It wasn't. No, we were all like, I mean, at least I was extremely sober.
Yeah.
And connected.
Yeah.
You know? I just did what we did, as our ancestors did. I just animaled. Like I walked around barefoot. I ate, like drank coconut milk, like ate off the earth, you know, not like picking food off the
earth. And then with this though, does it come with just a moment of like, what am I fucking doing? Like, what's my life about? Or is this a gradual internal dialogue?
I think it's both of those. Like the human mind can process everything at the same time, but yeah. Our consciousness can only pull into its focus one thing at a time, you know? So I think that like what the fuck moment definitely happened, but also there was this idea of like when you're sitting with a decision that doesn't feel right and you're like vomiting and you're anxious, it's like, oh, that's my body trying to tell me something, you know? Whereas like when you're a soldier and you're waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and like God knows what you're doing, you know, like there's so much of that anxiety and feelings that becomes your norm. And I think that when you quiet those anxious and kind of like angry feelings and you like soothe yourself, you can really arrive home. And so from that place, there's an opportunity for clarity to come through.
You're gone for a month and then you came back. What did your life look like when you came back? Because you said the intent was PhD, but through this experience, you recognize like, I don't care about the shit. So how does Sarah coming back look like, and then how did you get here?
So there was like definitely a lot of identity crisis, because, you know, like, and as an academic, there's definitely like prestige and things like that affiliated with having credentials. Mm-hmm. But then once you realize like that's not real, that stuff's external, like that I don't care that much about it. I would say I had a clear vision of where I was going, mm-hmm. in terms of what I wanted to do, but not really any idea of how to get there.
What was the vision?
The vision was that I'm like walking, my feet are in the grass, and there's like innate knowing that there's people there that I'm teaching tools to, and these tools are like breathing, movement, like walking in nature, and talking about neuroscience, like talking about how neuronal networks are formed, how we feel when we're like not safe, how when we're safe we can access our voice. Like, so this was the vision. And when I came back, I quit the army. That was a big deal. And then my partner and I had been together for 10 years, but we'd never like gotten pregnant or anything. So I immediately got pregnant once I quit the army. And then I started just practice teaching yoga. And through teaching, I kind of found how to articulate myself. And what like Joyce is talking about. So I realized like when people are coming to yoga, there's this vulnerability, you know, like once you're moved and you're sweating and like you're in these poses where your vision is limited, you're like, you know, trying to breathe and your body is in some kind of a fight flight. You're trying to calm yourself down. And you do that through breathing, and you do that through awareness and your expression, that there was like this profound shift in humans. And at the end of class, there was an opportunity to kind of part with some wisdom. So whether that's like a song that's going to make someone feel better, or something like, you know, I'm proud of you. Like, you've done good today. You deserve to be here. You know, and through that, I just started to work with people. And at the same time, I got into doing Thai massage. Gathering like different tools, different modalities, like for healing, for somatic release. And that, I slowly started to teach that. That's what I did. That's where I am now.
In the military, I don't know anything. In the military, because you just use words like you deserve to be here in this new stuff that you have discovered after military. Military and academia sound the same to me, right? It's that same fucking mindset where there's a certain level of importance that you achieve as you move a certain way, and you fell into that. And then you did the same thing paralleled in academia. And now this is it's cool to me that you've gone from this one thing and then the shift to the other thing that's parallel, and now you're way over fucking here. What's more important for people, do you think? And I know you really can't answer that, but
I'm gonna actually say that you might think that yoga is all the way on, over here, but some of the principles, like, of the military,
yeah,
like the discipline,
yes,
and all of that sort of stuff,
yes,
really do apply to, right, yoga. Because when you are in the process of, like,
if for me it was more the words that you said, just acknowledging that I deserve to be here, right, versus academia, yeah, you work to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be at this level unless you fucking work for it.
Yeah.
The military, you can't be at this level unless you fucking work for it. Yoga, you deserve to be here.
Yeah. So I would say if you do things in the military out of fear, in yoga, you're doing things from a place of safety.
Mm.
And these realizations that, like, it's a really rare thing to be born, and it's a really rare thing to be this expression of consciousness experiencing itself, being able to communicate,
mm-hmm,
you know? And it is a privilege to be here and to be able to, you know, be in the path of service. And when you're in the path of service, your intention matters. And when your intention's coming from a kind place, then that's compassion. And compassion is our human superpower. So when you realize that, when you're in relation in a compassionate way, as opposed to coming from it from fear, from, like, you know, you must respect me because I am the rank higher than you, you, right, know, that kind of thing. When you're coming from it because, like, I love Joyce, you know, she's such a kind human. Whenever I'm in pain, I can go to her, she can soothe me. Like, her intention is to take care of me. And, like, same thing with her. If she needs to chat about things when they're hard, like, she comes to me and I'm able to soothe that. And the same thing for myself. Like, I can soothe myself if I'm not sleeping well or if I'm in pain. Then that means I'm showing myself, like you would your children, the same love. And when you're coming from that place, like, where yoga is teaching us these tools to come to ourselves from a place of, like, love, kindness, belonging, compassion, then magic happens, you know? Awareness happens. And from a place of being aware, we interact with each other differently. And when we interact with each other from a place of kindness, then some amazing things happen, right? We can achieve and co-create. And yeah, so that's why we deserve to be here.
Tell me about the retreats.
So the retreats are a manifestation of that vision I had 10 plus years ago of facilitating groups of humans that are feeling similar things to, you know, young Sarah, disconnected from her body, stuck in a perpetual state of, like, fear, anxiety, unsafety. And it's called, like, the series is called Nurture in Nature. And that's what we do. We bring humans to Costa Rica on a beautiful land in the mountains that has waterfalls and pools. And over the course of the week, we do a lot of breathing, a lot of Qigong. My husband teaches Qigong. You know, if you've ever seen Asian people in the park doing that movement, that's what he teaches. We do tension release exercises. So this neurogenic shake.
How much more of a benefit is it to partake in this in nature?
It's really extraordinary to see people from the city come scared shitless of like a bug, like a cicada. That
it's me. I'm people.
Yeah, yeah, people. I'm city people. That's what I mean. Humans. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. And through the week, kind of like from understanding, like if you're ignorant and your fear is coming from ignorance. That's one way, right? If you're ignorant and you don't know and you're just afraid of things, like you've just, you know, bunched things together, there is this, again, I use the word profound awakening to understanding, like, no, like, I'm okay. Like, not everything's trying to kill me, you know? We can cohabitate together.
They're not trying to kill me? Okay.
Right. So there's some that are, but then you're educated about it, right? You can tell the difference between things. And like, understanding that in the jungle, like, when it's dark, is really terrifying. And so understanding that, like, you know, this is ancestral fear coming along because, like, our ancestors, you know, Joe died in the jungle when he didn't heed the darkness. And so, like, just understanding our fears and understanding, like, how environment can both heal us and harm us if we're not aware, the change in people is, again, really profound. Yeah, I use that term not lightly.
Even when we do the yoga retreats or the retreats kind of within the city, but like outside north, just them bring, like Sarah and Sean bringing them outside for a long walk and stuff, when they come back, it's like they're different people.
Have you done this with Sarah?
Oh, I stay inside.
You stay inside. Okay. Joyce hasn't quite become a non-city girl yet.
That's right. Because my husband needs some help inside, you know.
She's usually giving people a massage as well. Like, that's some true, people don't want to be outside. I get it. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea. But when you do go outside and you, you know, are in the elements, like, again, I'm coming from this from a very scientific and historical perspective. We are apes. We're animals. So, you know, our bodies are in tune with the outside. When you put your feet in dirt, it's grounding. You can't help but, like, feel grounded. And I mean that, like, if you put your foot on a pebble, the pain that radiates up your foot, like, there's no other way than for your attention to go down there and, like, be with your feet. So there's just very primitive need for our bodies to be in nature. And I know that, like, we're in our heads and we feel fear around that. But again, once you're exposed to the elements, you kind of get over that fear.
What about my husband with sensory issues that wouldn't put his feet in the dirt if you paid him $1 million?
I'd do it for $1 million.
Yeah, that's the number. All right. I actually really love that. So when we go, we have a place up north that we spend majority of the summer. Like, I do actually like to get away from the city and be in nature. But like I said, you know, for like a weekend or like a week, not for months at a time. But when I'm up there, I love to like walk in the garden or walk in the grass without shoes on. And Mark's always like, how the fuck do you do that? Like, why? And me and the kids run around and like they'll even like run across the rocks. And he's like, I don't understand that. And I said, when I was a kid, I don't think I ever wore shoes. I would run across the rocks like it was nothing. But no, Mark's not into the whole grounding thing.
That's also why my feet are baby soft right now.
It's true. He does have the nicest feet of all of us because we all run around like apes with no shoes on.
It's the best.
It is the best.
But is it the Asian in you, do you think? Because it's the Asian in me that I'm like, I can't have anything dirty.
I don't know if it's the Asian in me, but I'm
yeah, he doesn't like dirt. He doesn't, oh, and he doesn't like the feeling of like wetness or coldness on his feet. So like if the grass is a little dewy, he's like, oh no, why are you doing that?
Disgusting. Yeah. It's either we're gonna get them wet, we're putting them in the lake, or we're putting them in the ocean, or they're gonna be fucking dry.
Yeah.
Is the reason for this middle ground of wetness.
Shoes are his friend. So I really, okay, long time ago on one of our episodes, I called myself a science hippie. And what I meant by that is like, there is so much, I mean, you're a neuroscientist, you can tell us, there is so much science behind everything you're saying and about like releasing energy and all, but like when people speak that way, other people are like, yeah, you're a hippie, right? Like you just like to run around naked in a forest. And I would say like, no, I'm a science hippie. Like this, really, there is so much science behind everything you're saying. And if humans could connect more with their body, their mind, like just in go internal, as you said, versus like looking for things externally, it really does change the way you look at almost everything. It changes the way that you interact with people, like you said. And it just, it, I know for myself, I've become a lot more understanding and compassionate to other people. Like somebody might say something where maybe 20 years ago Amanda would have said like, wow, you're a fucking idiot, like I can't deal with you, you are so stupid. Whereas today Amanda will say like, okay, this person needs a lot of help, but I'm a little more willing to help somebody who just, you know, throws out some nonsense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing is that like it's interesting that we need someone like Huberman to tell us that we need sun,
right?
You know, so that to me is kind of dumb. Like you're a creature of this planet, like the earth is like earth, that's physics, you yeah. know, that's just physics. Like we wouldn't be here without the sun. Like we would not have evolved from that primordial soup without the sun. So the fact that like we have to actually hang on Huberman or whoever else, like, you know, he just comes easier because like I know in within my own circle of people, like grown ass adults that are like, oh, I'm doing this because Huberman said it. It's like, oh, so you needed to be told that you're depressed because you haven't been in the sun, or you know what
just
I mean?
Anecdotally, don't people, I guess people maybe don't have the self-awareness, but don't you notice how much better you feel if you have gone outside today, if you have gone for a walk today, if you have drank water today? Like, do people not notice that? Or I mean, I guess
no, they don't actually.
If you don't practice being self-aware, well then fuck, you're not gonna be self-aware.
Amen.
If you don't pay attention to how you feel in any moment, then you're not paying attention to it.
I take my kids to Costa Rica every year. Every year we're there for a couple of weeks. My son, who's, you know, 10, just rappelled down waterfalls this year. Like that was
That's cool.
So when people actually come to the retreats and they're like freaking out, it's interesting to see the like my kids interact with them. It's like, what's wrong with you? Like, you know. So I think that as much as it is important to have them be tech savvy and, you know how to play video games, Joyce, it's also really important for them to feel comfortable in nature. Yeah. And, you know, I'm hoping that more and more parents are willing to take their kids to get their feet wet and in dirt so that that connection is at least there, you know?
Yeah. What I've tried most as a parent is not to pass down my stupid, irrational fears and nonsense onto my kids. So I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday because she was so proud that her 4-year-old son didn't freak out at the dentist. I said, well, why would he? Like, unless you told him the dentist was scary, why would he? This is just something he's going to do. You're there. Like, my kids have never freaked out at the dentist. They've never freaked out if they have to get a blood test or anything because I never told them, like, this is going to hurt and this is scary. It's just, we're going to go get a blood test now. Isn't this cool? We get to pull some blood out of your body and see it. And like, they've never, well, I shouldn't say they. The oldest one never did. The youngest one just freaks out about anything I ask her to do, even if it's just, you know, stand up. Why? Why do I have to stand? That's just her personality. But I've tried not to pass down, like, yeah, I mean, I'm not so much of an outdoorsy person, but I also, like I said, I like the outdoors and I do recognize the importance of grounding and all those things. So one of my kids was showering the other day, and there was a spider on the shower curtain. And she was like, "Wow, there's a spider up there." I'm like, that dude is way more scared right now, because if he falls into the water, he's dead. I'm like, you can chill. He's coming nowhere near you. She's like, "Oh yeah, that's right. He'll die." And she just kept washing her hair. Like, don't worry about that spider. Nothing is going to happen to you.
Yeah. So like what you just did there, what you're talking about is literally the whole teachings of yoga. Mm. Like, it's basically becoming aware of your own internal states. Like, maybe your mom was scared of spiders, and you became aware that, like, oh shit, like, now I have anxiety because my mom was scared of spiders. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you're trying to deal with your own children, you're like, I'm aware that this fear might exist for me, however, right now there's no harm coming to anybody, the environment is safe, and you make judgment based on that, how to interact with your kids, right?
Yeah,
all of those things are really difficult things to do in the brain.
Yeah.
You know, it requires a lot of mental arithmetic and kind of like gymnastics for that to happen. For like, it's like error correction and inhibition of these like irrational fears and things.
Yeah, I know. I was telling Mark, when we were kids, I don't know if it was like this for every household, but when we were kids, we liked what mom liked. We ate what mom ate. It was like everything was just based on who mom was. And I've always kind of like held on to that, like, whatever I say or do, like, this is what the kids are going to believe, right? So when it came to food, my mother's an extremely picky eater. I tell her now, I'm like, she's in her 60s, I'm like, you eat like a toddler, because she's extremely picky. But then I was like that growing up. Like, I was really grossed out by meat, for example. Like, everything about it was just really gross to me. But that's because I'd watch my mom pick off every little bit of fat or cartilage or skin of a chicken. Like, this is gross. You know, you don't want to eat this. And, you know, she'd get down to where she had this little tiny piece of meat on her plate, and she'd eat that. And so that's how I watch my kids like freaking savages with like a pork rib or like a chicken leg, and they just eat everything right down to the bone. I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. They're not like me.
Mm. That's so good to see, you know. Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're just all breaking these silly habit patterns that have been passed down, and hopefully that goes down to like our prejudices and these beliefs that we have that like stop us from really coming into our own power and finding our voice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like my journey, my shift in perspective.
How long is the retreat?
The retreats in Costa Rica are 1 week long.
What does day three look like?
Day three is a beach day. So
I like day three.
Yeah. Yeah. So we pack up from the retreat center, get into a little shuttle, and drive about 10 kilometers to the closest beach called Ventanas, which means windows. And there's like these ginormous rocks that have created caves. And so they're what the windows are. So people like to like walk in through that. And everybody likes to take like Instagram videos on day three of their transformation, like their their physical tans or whatever is going on. And yeah, I think like the ocean is so healing. And there's this childlike wonder that comes about being in the ocean and the environment of the ocean. So like just being in the waves and like putting your feet in the sand, or, you know, like things like that.
Well, now you're speaking Mark's language. Yeah. The ocean he loves. Mm-hmm. I know we don't have a ton of time left with Sarah because she does have children that she has to pick up. If there's people listening that are interested in learning more about what you do here or north of the city or the retreats, how can people find you?
I'm on all sorts of social platforms. I have a website, and should I say it?
Yeah, give us all the information.
All right. So on Instagram, I'm Salehi John, which means Dear Salehi, SALEHI_JAAN. On websites, I'm sarahsalehi.ca. You can email me at sarah@sarahsalehi.ca. You know, I run courses all the time about somatic healing, which basically puts neuroscience in a very, utilitarian perspective, along with movement, breathing, and all sorts of somatic tools. I run day retreats, 3-4 times a year. Overnight retreats, we do like hot cold exposure and stuff like that, and then the overseas retreats.
Very cool.
When you're doing your you're overseas, what does the screening look like? Because I assume you don't just take anyone that wants to sign up for something like this.
No, definitely lessons learned the hard way.
Oh, before you were just like, hey, you want to come?
No, but like, you never know, you know,
there's got to be some sort of screening.
Yeah, so I basically have an interview, like as if we're recruiting students.
Right.
And throughout the interview, we discuss like, what are your realistic goals of why you want to come?
Right.
And then what it looks like to be there, and then any questions like about the reality of what to expect. So for example, you know, if you dry your hair with a hair dryer every day and that's a non-negotiable for you, obviously that's right, not going right. to be for you. Like if you can't be sober like for 1 or 2 days at least, like this isn't for you, you know. If you don't like the heat or bugs or being a little bit out of control about what's happening, like, you know, like the jungle is very unpredictable, then it's not for you. You know, it's for someone who really wants to literally immerse themselves in nature.
What about you, Joyce? You think you'll ever go?
Baby steps. I've been talking to her about camping during the summers, and it still hasn't happened yet. So baby steps.
Yeah. So last year, what we did succeed at doing is we're a part of the body workers. Like we massage at this festival called the Prince Edward County Full Moon Festival, and it's in Prince Edward County, obviously, and usually in August. And so last year we booked little cabins at this place called Isaiah Tubbs by the water, and like I think that was the most she was willing to do, which was like, you're still inside, there's beds, there's bathrooms, like Kenny's cooking, and then you step outside and there's like the elements. So, you know, baby steps.
Baby steps.
Cool.
Well, I'm really happy that Joyce said, I'm bringing my friend. I don't even know how this happened. Like I said, we booked it so long ago. She said, I want you to talk to my friend Sarah. And I said, okay. And we just trusted Joyce. We're like, okay. If Joyce says she's cool, yeah, let's do it. We had no idea what we were talking about today.
You can see our pre-screen is fabulous, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we knew one person coming on the couch today. It was all good. Thank you so much for coming. Joyce, thank you as always. And I guess I'm wrapping it up.
Yeah. This might be a new trend.
I don't
season
like this.
Season 7, new trend.
I hate this trend.
Maybe I'll keep my throat uncomfortable.
No. All right. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.